Modo the gardener was on his knees mulching the dahlias when he heard a rhythmic scraping and thumping behind him, such as might be made by someone trying to move a heavy object. He turned his head.
"Evening, Mr. Poons. Still dead, I see."
"Evening, Modo. You've got the place looking very nice."
"There's someone moving a door along behind you, Mr. Poons."
"Yes, I know."
The door edged cautiously along the path. As it passed Modo, it pivoted awkwardly, as if whoever was carrying it was trying to keep as much behind it as possible.
"It's a kind of a security door," said Windle.
He paused. There was something wrong. He couldn't quite be certain what it was, but there was suddenly a lot of wrongness about, like hearing one note out of tune in an orchestra. He audited the view in front of him.
"What's that you're putting the weeds into?" he said.
Modo glanced at the thing beside him.
"Good, isn't it?" he said. "I found it by the compost heaps. My wheelbarrow broke, so I looked up and there..."
"I've never seen anything like it before," said Windle. "Who'd want to make a big basket out of wire? And those wheels don't look big enough."
"But it pushes along well by the handle," said Modo. "I'm amazed that anyone would want to throw it away. Why would anyone want to throw away something like this, Mr. Poons?"
Windle stared at the trolley. He couldn't escape the feeling that it was watching him. He heard himself say,
"Maybe it got there by itself."
"That's right, Mr. Poons. It wanted a bit of peace, I expect," said Modo. "You are a one."
"Yes," said Windle unhappily. "It rather looks that way."
He stepped out into the city, aware of the scraping and thumping of the door behind him. If someone had told me a month ago, he thought, that a few days after I died I'd be walking along the road followed by a bashful bogeyman hiding behind the door, why, I'd have laughed at them. No, I wouldn't. I'd have said, "Eh? And what? And speak up?" and wouldn't have understood anyway. Beside him, someone barked. A dog was watching him. It was a very large dog. In fact, the only reason it could be called a dog and not a wolf was that everyone knew you didn't get wolves in cities. It winked. Windle thought,
"No full moon last night."
"Lupine?" he ventured. The dog nodded.
"Can you talk?"
The dog shook its head.
"So what do you do now?"
Lupine shrugged.
"Want to come with me?"
There was another shrug that almost vocalized the thought, "Why not? What else have I got to do?" If someone had told me a month ago, Windle thought, that a few days after I died I'd be walking along the road, followed by a bashful bogeyman hiding behind a door, and accompanied by a kind of negative version of a werewolf, why, I probably would have laughed at them. After they'd repeated themselves a few times, of course, in a loud voice. The death of rats rounded up the last of his clients, many of whom had been in the thatch, and led the way through the flames towards wherever it was that good rats went. He was surprised to pass a burning figure forcing its way through the incandescent mess of collapsed beams and crumbling floorboards. As it mounted the blazing stairs, it removed something from the disintegrating remains of its clothing and held it carefully in its teeth. The death of rats did not wait to see what happened next. While it was in some respects as ancient as the first proto-rat, it was also less than a day old and still feeling its way as a death, and it was probably aware that a deep thumping noise that was making the building shake was the sound of brandy starting to boil in its barrels. The thing about boiling brandy is that it doesn't boil for long. The fireball dropped bits of the inn half a mile away. White, hot flames erupted from the holes where the doors and windows had been. The walls exploded, burning rafters whirred overhead. Some buried themselves in neighbouring roofs, starting more fires. What was left was just an eye-watering glow, and then little pools of shadow within the glow. They moved and ran together and formed the shape of a tall figure striding forward, carrying something in front of it. It passed through the blistered crowd and trudged up the cool, dark road towards the farm. The people picked themselves up and followed it, moving through the dusk like the tail of a dark comet. Bill Dawe climbed the stairs to Miss Flitworth's bedroom and laid the child on the bed.
"She said there was an apothecary somewhere near here."
Miss Flitworth pushed her way through the crowd at the top of the stairs.
"There's one in Chambly," she said, "but there's a witch over Lankaway."
"No witches, no magic. Send for him, and everyone else, go away."
It wasn't a suggestion. It wasn't even a command, it was simply an irrefutable statement. Miss Flitworth waved her skinny arms at the people.
"Come on, come on, it's all over. Shoo! You're all in my bedroom. Go on, get out."
"How did he do it?"